I from the National Studios in Broadcasting House, I am George Asikri with this edition of Behind the News, where we bring you latest updates and detailed analysis of current happenings in the country. Tonight, the flood in Tamale that has left three dead moves Vice President Dr. Mahamudu Bawumia to the region. Is this an indication that no part of the country is safe in rainy seasons? We'll be finding out. Head of Local Government Service proposes monthly payment to assembly members. What difference will this make? And Electoral Commission Chairperson and others meet parliamentarians on a myriad of issues. Does their posture signal any? Welcome back. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Moving on to our very first story. It is the peak of the rainy season and the rains are falling across the country with mixed impact. As usual, the flood began in the Greater Accra region and moved to the eastern, central and western regions. The northern regional capital, Tamale, which is least expected when it comes to floodings, is the latest victim. At least three people have been confirmed dead in the disaster in the Tamale metropolis. Behind the News looks at the flood in the northern region and the likely impact if the Bagri Dam is spilled in neighboring Burkina Faso. We shall also be looking at the eastern part of the region, which appears to have been left out in all these discussions. Joining us on the line is Dr. Prosper Larry. He's a lecturer at the Department of Environment and Resource, University of Development Studies, UDS. Good evening, Doug, and welcome to Behind the News. Hello. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. We shall try and re-establish contact with Dr. Larry. Meanwhile, our Northern Regional Correspondent, Mutala Issa, joins us to give us situational analysis and overview of the situation. Good evening and welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, George.
First, what's the latest in terms of the casualties?
Well, what we are hearing is that they have confirmed two more deaths in the northern region. So this brings the figure to three. There's a woman who died yesterday that we all saw in that sad video. But some other people were found today, and including a boy were found today, and that makes it three people. There are rumors flying all over the place that the number could be greater, but we are unable to establish that with officials. They have not been able to confirm that to us.
But is this figure limited to the metropolis, Tamale?
That is limited to the Tamale metropolis, which has been, let me say, the epicenter of this whole flooding situation. Bumani, you know very well, Kunyavila, Kasalgu, and other suburbs. You know, the northern region being such a low-lying region, and Tamale being the center of it, it was a serious devastation. I must say, however, that hundreds of people remain homeless, because their houses were virtually submerged. The other side of it, George, is that there's so much attention on the Tamale metropolis. But I traveled along the Eastern Corridor today, and the situation here is not very good.
The Eastern Corridor, which areas are you talking about?
Well, if you know Yendi to Bimbila, because of the Eastern Corridor construction, there are some three bridges that remain uncompleted. So there's a diversion. Because of that diversion, there's water all over the place. So that portion has been cut off. If you go to from Yendi to Tatale, there's a portion where the road is completely cut off. People are not able to cross and come towards Yendi. It is the same thing. We have this bridge called the Palbe Bridge from Saboba. As you are entering Yendi, it's also cut off. After we're fully heading towards Terponi, if you are coming to us again, Yendi, that portion is also cut off. So I can count at least 6 to 7 districts in the region that is highly inaccessible. And this afternoon, the clouds appeared very, very dark. Even up to this evening, it appeared very dark. And my fear is that if the rains continue, we could have a very devastating situation. If you go to, I'm told, Cherponi, as you head towards Togo, there are communities on the Ghanaian side. Winchiki and the rest are all suffering from this. But there is silence over there, and it is important that NADMO and other government officials pay attention to these communities because they are in a very vulnerable situation.
Mutala, is it the usual thing? Is it an annual occurrence?
Well, for Tamale Metropolis, I must say over the last 4 years, almost every year, water carries away someone. We lose a life almost every year. That particular spot where you saw the sad incident of the woman tumbling with her car. This is the third time that I am experiencing that from Tamale. Last year, between Tamale and Nyangpala, there's a portion called Kunyavila. Another woman lost her life there. So flooding within the Tamale metropolis has become an annual affair. And you also know that across the region, we all remember the 2008 flood that had massive devastation. I think that was during the days of the former president, John Adekunle Akufo. They had to employ a lot of strategies to deal with this. As we speak, the Bagri Dam is not spilled yet, but the volume of water I saw yesterday and then today in certain areas that have no river at all makes me feel sad. And it scares me that if the rains continue that way, I'm not sure where that volume of water is going. Because in the middle of nowhere, there's no bridge. You see, it is just like a lake. And you wonder where the water is coming from.
Mutala, what have been the response from both government and the private sector if this, like you said, is an annual occurrence?
Well, let me start even with today. The latest is that the Vice President, Dr. Mahmoud Bawumia, was in town today. He was in Tamale to commiserate with victims of yesterday's disaster. He went around and then greeted some of them, empathized with bereaved families, and they promised to deliver on some goods. However, if one go back into history, over the years, what has happened? Take Gumani, for instance. A storm drain is under construction in Gumani to allow for water to pass. But that drain has been under construction for, if I'm not mistaken, over 4 years. And it's moving at a very, very slow pace. And I think that they need to speed up that construction. Now, Garba Lodge proper, there's an engineering problem there. The entire Jisunaili area through Kamvili, the water pours in there. There is no drainage at all. It is just a culvert. And after the culvert that the road runs over, there is virtually no concrete to direct the water. The water runs into houses all directions, and it always moves with such speed and force. So, city authorities need to do something to make sure that they open up the drainage system. They are constructing some, but I'm afraid to say that they are a bit too small. We need certain areas of town to have storm drains to allow for more volume of water to pass. Idrisu Musa Superior recently started a deep congestion exercise. I'm hoping that it will go to include houses that have been built on some of these storm drainages and on waterways. If they are able to do and break such houses, we should be having more space for water to pass.
Mutala, earlier you did say that so many people are homeless. Where are those people?
George, this is Africa. This is the northern region where we are each other's keeper. Most of these people easily were able to move to the neighbor's house, the brother's house, the auntie's house to have a place to sleep. However, I must say that that has also created overcrowding in some houses. Some people also managed to salvage the remains in their houses. They have dried things up and they are back living in their homes. I visited some homes around the victim target area this morning, and people are back in their houses going about their normal duties.
And what has been the response of NADMO?
NADMO, as at morning yesterday, as at this morning, we're going around to do an assessment of the extent of damage. We have not heard that they have given materials as relief so far, but there are assurances that they will be supporting these victims. The Northern Regional Minister, Salif Usaid Amase, also went round yesterday, immediately after the flood. He went round to express his sympathy with these people, and they promised to bring them some support.
Right.
For now, possibly what they should be looking at is mattresses and food items, because people have also lost their food, and some of them are not able to even work as a result.
Mutala, I want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight.
If you just allow me a minute to say that we don't have to also just look at the negative side. There's a positive side to this flood. The water that we're having in the region, it's unfortunate we are losing life and losing property. But the good side is that for some years now, we've been crying that Akoso Ombo Dam has been dry. So it has led to Dumso. The Bui Dam has been dry. With the volume of water I saw yesterday and today, I'm hoping that this will all wash into the White Volta and then feed the Akoso Ombo Dam and Bui Dam. Hopefully, Dumso should be a thing of the past.
Thank you very much. Mutala Issa is our Northern Regional Correspondent speaking to us from Tamale. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Also on the line is Dr. Prosper Larry. He's a lecturer at the Department of Environment and Resource, University for Development Studies, UDS. Good evening, Doc, and welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening, Mr. Secretary.
Is the northern region naturally prone to flooding?
You see, just like your correspondent did mention, the low-lying area supposed to be plain. In fact, when you look at the topography, we shouldn't be having so much problem in the north because almost everywhere is fairly plain. But you begin to realize that northern region, and for that matter, Tamale, is now one of the fastest-growing areas in the country. And you get to realize that massive urbanizations lead to more impermeable surfaces, meaning that the more the development, the more the amount of water retention is low. So it increases a lot of runoff, meaning that anytime you have incidences of this high amount of rain, you're likely going to have it not to be able to settle. And when there are no drainage systems and all those other hydrological systems that are supposed to move this water, then you get to realize that it must find some indirect and other unapproved assets to let off these water systems. So you will realize that, like the correspondent rightly said, for about 4 years now, it's an area that is prone to flooding, that is not of any maybe natural cause, but the result of engineering and what we call non-structural deficit.
If the trend should continue in terms of the rain...
Hello?
If the rain should continue in the coming years, are we going to see similar trend, or there's some indication on the ground that things may change?
You see, I don't see anything changing because, you know, Ghanaians are used to this firefighting approach when incidents happen. Because I think I just read today that the assembly has decided to demolish buildings on waterways. And you ask yourself, how do we allow people to build on these water courses? I already told you that there are several ways flooding occurs. Some are just natural. But you see that in our ways, the human behavior, for that matter, is also influencing this flooding. Because why should you build on a waterway? And why should those who grant building permits and other things permit these things to happen? And after it is done, you now go to say that you want to demolish those places. It means that when these rains come at any volume, it is still going to trigger floods, whether we like it or not. And developments are ongoing. People will not stop building. Other infrastructure projects cannot come to a halt. So what are we doing to these things that are happening?
In the northern region, you talked about the topography. The last time I visited there, if you go to the outskirts, you see, notice that in most places, there are smaller dams there. When it is dry season, the place dries up, and so people build closer. Some of the farmers depend on that for their farm produce. The Ministry of Agri area particular used to be one such area. Today there are so many buildings there. Even if gutters are constructed and it rains as we are experiencing, there will still be flooding. What else should be done?
No, but you see, even you remember that I told you that there are natural forces. Like, even in the developed countries, flooding do occur as a result of hurricanes and maybe sometimes storms and coastal districts. But you realize that the human effect that brings about flooding is quite minimized. these places you are talking about, the dam. In fact, creating of dam, reservoir, bridges, and culverts are one of the structural ways, even though expensive, of remedying the effects of flood. But don't also forget, even in this same Tamale, in 1989, you remember the Waterworks Dam. Even though there was a dam, but as a result of the fact that the rains were so high that the capacity of dam could not contain it, and they were doing a dredging at that time, which I understand that at that point, instead of them letting off those outlets, they did not do anything like that. So when the volume of water exceeded the capacity of the dam, it would even break the dam walls and lead out to those people. So yes, dams are good. We can put all these things, but the human factor, the human intervention, the same humans that throw litter, put into the bins and those drainages. If you don't stop those things and even have the drain, because the correspondent made a very important point, because yesterday where my parents stay in Tamale, that's full. That's one of the places that the Gariba Lodge drains up to that place. And you can see that those channels are small, the culverts are small, and even in the midst of how small they are, the capacity, you still see that people throw in a lot of garbage, litter those places, and block the natural course of water. When the natural course of water is blocked, it must take an inapproved access. And the amount of energy that this water has, we say the potential energy that is resident in those occupants, if it is to let go, you can imagine, there is nothing that can stop it. It will move anywhere.
The growth will continue. What should be done?
If
I said the growth of the metropolis,
yes,
will continue,
yes,
and so what should be done to stop, yes, future flooding?
You see, and I think that I am a geomatic engineer and, of course, with a surveying background. And one of the things that we have failed to consider when we are issuing our permit is the issue of the topography, in that you just go, they assess your plan, they don't look at the topography of the place. Now, buildings will continue, developments will continue. But what do? We need flood-prone risk maps. So with this flood-prone risk maps, it means that in addition to the site plan that you have, we need to at least have an elevation, what we call a digital elevation model. We need to at least find out the profile of the area. How is it a low-lying area? What is the degree of it? I mean, when we get to know this, it means that when you are submitting your structural drawing for approval, they can give you, like I told you, that our area where my parents stay in full, that place, water did not enter because, even by the engineering process, we added about 1.5 feet to the foundation because we knew the topography of the place. So it means that the assembly must result into special methods of us being able to delineate all the places that are flood-prone areas, because we can tell right from those places that were flooded. It's not new because they lie lowland and they are flood-prone areas. Then we see some of the steps we can take to regulate these things, such that when we know the profile of the area, we'll be able to give better engineering options so that when people build, it will not be sited on waterways. The water will have natural causes and outlets to let it go.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Dr. Prosper Larry is a geomatic engineer with the Department of Environment and Resource, University for Development Studies, UDS. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana, and also on the line is the Member of Parliament for Tamale Central, Inusa Fuseni. Good evening, Mark Zelena, and welcome to the program. Hello.
Hello. Yes, sir.
Good evening. Welcome to the program.
Good evening. How are you?
Very well. Nice having you. What's the flood situation in your constituency?
Well, thank you so very much for this opportunity. But before I even assess the flood situation in my constituency, let me take opportunity to console the families of the those who lost their lives in the tragic incidents in Tamale, especially the flood situation that occurred in Tamale, and also to commiserate with all those who lost property during the flood yesterday. My constituency, Tamale Central, was affected minimally. because Tamil Central is perched on a hill.
Okay.
The only low-lying areas in Tamil Central are the Gumbini area. That is the area where the old Waterworks Electricity Company was situated. And so, and I've closely monitored the situation. We have done a big gutter, that's the storm drain. And I think that the storm drain was able to carry all the water away from the area. So, generally speaking, Tamil Central has been minimally affected.
When you were roads minister, I remember watching you on television instructing the contractor to do better things. In fact, I think some of them, you even asked them to leave the site until they did better job. Today, we're hearing of engineering deficit. What could have been the problem? Is it that they didn't take your instruction?
In the Tamil situation?
Yes.
Oh, the Tamil situation, it is not as an engineering defect by way of design of the storm drain. It is the inability of the carry the water and empty same far away from places where human settlements have taken place. And so the storm empties the water, the flood waters, in areas that are already occupied. And since there are no drains there, those areas are. And so the water moves everywhere and enters people's homes. So that's what has actually happened in Tamale. The full area, that is Tamale North, there's a big storm drain, I think. Growing up, that was an area where you needed to swim to cross if it was in the rainy season. Now there's a big storm drain. Now, apart from the storm drain and the bridge, the water finds its way to people's homes immediately after leaving the storm drain. You talk about Changli, there's a big storm drain behind the House of Chiefs. And so, collects water and empties them. And all this water aggregates and collects on the area where the flooding took place in Tamale Central. Even the water that finally finds its way to that area that is in Tamale North. And so I think that is, and the downpour was heavy, not downpour that has been recorded in recent history. So clearly, I mean, it took more than 4 or 5 hours of intensive rain. And so you can imagine the water that collected, and probably that accounts for the reason why the devastation was massive.
Is the Tamale metropolis becoming unsafe when it comes to rainy seasons?
It only means that we have to redouble our effort. And because Tamale has been described expanding metropolis. And so humans outgrows the provision of utilities and provision of drainage infrastructure and even engineering works to ensure that when these disasters happen, they are able to be controlled and mitigated. And so that is the challenge now. Those areas that have been flooded, there are no roads for even you, for the Minister of Roads and Highways to do drain. And so the water will move anyway because water will level at its course. And so we need to intensify engineering works to ensure that in future, we are able to continue the devastating effects of floods.
All right. I want to thank you very much, Mark Zelina, for your time on our show.
Thank you. Thank you so very much.
Inusa Fuseni is the Member of Parliament for Tamale Central. It's Behind the News. We live on Radio Ghana. Also joining us on the line is the officer in charge of the Kotoka International Airport Metu Office, Joseph Potofi. Good evening and welcome to the program.
Good evening and welcome for having me.
Is the weather good for internal flight?
Yes, and very well.
What is the flight situation like between Accra and Tamale in these few days that we've been experiencing rains?
Actually, I think flights have been very good. The only problem is when there is a storm, beyond them, they have a way of doing it. Either they delay the flight for the storm to pass, or they pass over the flight. You know? So I don't think that we've had any much problem with the flight cancellation over any of the things.
So there's not been any pause at all? Normal flight service?
Very well. Maybe it might be a delay of 1 hour or 2 hours. No. We cancel any flight because of weather parameters. So,
how does it look like in the coming days? I mean, the weather.
Currently, the coastal areas in the Middle Belt are in what we normally term as a dry spell. A dry spell in the sense that they are out of the hood when it comes to the rainy season. So, especially the coastal areas, intermittently, we're having a very cloudy atmosphere, and then maybe light or slight rain, drizzle, early morning drizzle, evening drizzle, afternoon drizzle. But when it comes to the northern part of the country, which is the subject of your discussion this evening, this is the beginning of their rainy season.
Okay.
Yes, because when you look at our rain pattern, rainfall pattern, we have the coastal and the middle belt have two, the minor and the major. And when you go to the northern part of the country, they have what you call the bonus season, a single season, which spans from late July to August, all the way to October end. That's where it gets out of the season. The northern part of the country are in their major season. They just in their major season.
So should we expect more rains?
Very well. If you recollect our seasonal forecast that we issued somewhere around April and March over the whole country, we said that most parts of the country will experience above average rainfall, and we even managed to give that the western coast, the northern part of the country, and some areas will experience as much as over 90%. Of rainfall as compared to what we have last year. And that I've taken already, these areas have already even exceeded the annual rainfall. So that is the annual rainfall is 1,000. They have already exceeded 1,000. This means what we said is coming on. And with the northern part of the country, since they are now getting into their rainy season, whatever happened yesterday, we will expect more of those things. I think what happened yesterday was, the system came very early at dawn, and because of the pressures ahead of it, and there was a convective activity in that system, what happened was that the rain was able to sustain as far as over 5-6 hours. And once it is pouring down, definitely, if we don't have structures to sustain them and let them took their natural course, then definitely they'll be flooded.
Any precautionary measures?
Oh, very well. I think. You know, the northern part of the country have a rainfall pattern just as Burkina Faso. So even this evening that I was speaking to you, there's a serious rain over Burkina Faso. And you know what time I find it crossing to the sea. Burkina Faso have not gotten it. What will happen is that once it's raining heavily over Burkina Faso, and it has also rained heavily over Ghana, it means over the northern part of the country, most of the land has been already saturated. So any little rain, coupled with what is coming from Burkina Faso, because for them, because of the dam, when they have a little, when they feel the water is a danger to their dam, they will just use it to a spillover. So this is the time that NADMO and the Metropolitan Assembly is up and going. Because for we will get a forecast. That they need to educate those who are on the lowland areas. They know every year it happens. This is the time to be moving up the higher ground.
Okay.
And those who have also cultivated crops that are not early matured and they are still there. So when the flood comes, we should destroy the crops. So, yes, the farmers, they know the topography, the environment of the area, and they know their range. So that I believe if they are able to do what is right and what they do, what we call the success theory, they will be get out of the problem.
All right. We are very grateful for your time on our show tonight, sir.
Thank you very much.
Joseph Potofi is the officer in charge of meteo service at the Kotoka International Airport. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana. And moving on to other stories, the need for assembly members to be paid monthly from the consolidated fund has come up again. The monthly emolument to assembly members is to serve as additional incentive for them to deepen grassroots participation in local governance towards accelerated development. The latest to add his voice to the calls, the head of the local government service, Dr. Nana Atuatha. He is proposing that both elected and appointed assembly members of all the 216 metropolitan, municipal and district assemblies be paid to serve as a moral booster for them to work well. So how feasible and sustainable will this be? Joining us on the line is the head Department of Urban and Environmental Management at the Institute of Local Government Studies, Fred Ejakun Odro. Good evening and welcome to the program.
Good evening.
This must be a piece of good news if assembly members are to be paid.
Yeah, it is good news, but as you said in your intro, the problem is sustainability.
But what difference will it make if they are paid?
It will make a lot of difference because currently, if you look at the Local Governance Act 2016 Act 936, it doesn't make allowance for the payment of salaries per se. It allows for the payment of allowances, things like transport and certain allowances. It doesn't make a proposal. There's no provision for the payment of salaries per se. But then, considering the work that assembly members do, it will be very good and helpful to get them to be paid to support the work they do.
Will that not be amount to opening the floodgates? Yes, they work, but we have board members of state institutions. They are not paid either. Are they not also working?
Well, I wouldn't want to compare them because some of them may not be paid salaries, but there are certain allowances are so good that it's far and above those who receive salaries. But the issue is, as it stands, assemblies make some payments to their members. But the problem is, if we are to pay them, what is going to be the source? As it is, we know that even government is having difficulties with employment freeze, which is not allowing government to employ even the people that the government might need for some of the key sectors of the economy. So to want to pay assembly members out of the consolidated fund is out of the question, as far as I can tell. The only means possible will be for the assemblies themselves to work extremely hard to be able to give them adequate compensation for the work they do. But I think that is where there seems not to be much improvement in the ability of the assembly to pay for the work they do. Moreover, we need to be mindful of the, if you look at the section 170 of the Local Government Act, it talks about the expenditure of the assembly, which gives the assembly the power to incur reasonable expenditures necessary for the carrying out of its work. It must be noted that some of these things would need budgetary allocations to enable the assemblies to do them. So I think to be able to get to that level, there must be certain key things done, including, promulgation of specific laws to enable that to be done. But as things stand, there is no law that permits assembly members to be paid. Mind you, let me be very careful to state clearly that I am in support of paying assembly members because the work they do is very critical for the local governance system. But I can't see clearly the sources of the funding and also looking at the legal regime as it pertains now, something must be done about the law before we can even think about that.
And what will you say to those who respond by saying that in trying to pay assembly members whose work has been sacrificial, and despite that, we have it's a competitive system. And so paying them, you're trying to kill the spirit of voluntarism.
I wouldn't say that because practically, if you work closely with assembly members, you will come to appreciate the kind of pressure the real lander. In fact, it's almost akin to what members of parliament face. Assembly members in their various committees are required to go out of their way to attend funerals, social gatherings, support families, pay school fees, and a whole lot of things going on. So I think that if we want to support them, we must seriously continue with the discussion and find sustainable ways. And the catch word is sustainability of the payment. Otherwise, if we don't find a sustainable way, we may start and fail. We realized that not too long ago, back in 2012 or thereabouts, efforts were made to even give them motorbikes. After that, subsequently, government has not been able to continue with that exercise. It tells you that funding is a difficulty for the assemblies, but we need to have a discussion. And assembly members themselves, in fact, I've had opportunity to speak to quite a number of them in various training. I tell them that, look, if they want to be paid very well, they must also ensure that assemblies are able to rake in adequate internally generated funds. That can go a long way to supporting them than relying on central government. I don't think, as things stand now in the foreseeable future, I don't think central government can swallow the payment of assembly members.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Freddy Jakun-Drew is the head of the Department of Environmental Management at the Institute of Local Government Studies. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana, and also joining us on the line is George Kuntu Blankson. He is an expert, the practical type, on when it comes to local government. He's been through the stages, and the last time I checked, he was a member of parliament for Fantiman East, if I'm right. Good evening and welcome to the program.
Good evening, my brother, and how are you?
Very well. Thanks for having you. And as a practical man who has gone through all these stages, do you support calls for assembly members to be paid?
Yeah. To start with, let me thank your listeners and be grateful to you for calling it. My opinion with regards to the issue, I think nobody will talk against that some much should not be paid if we have the resource. If we have the resource. I've been at this before, and taking cognizance of the premise of the Constitution, that brought into being the defense of this assembly. It was a grassroots organization or institution that will prepare our development for a gas decentralization. So there will be fair play in development insofar as our communities and the countries are concerned. That is the evolution of the power from the top to the center, to the grassroots. So the people own their development. And the people will be able to express what they want within their various localities. That is right. And there are laws that govern the operations of the assembly. And as we speak now, it is premature for us to say that assembly is paid. Based on our fragile economy that we see as it. So any government official who comes out to say that the assemblymen should be paid as we stand now, then the person doesn't know what he's talking about. Then he's living in a paradise of his own. You understand?
Okay.
It's not bad as giving a remuneration to assemblymen with regard to the effort they do. The affairs approach people when it comes to the development of the area or gathering information for the central government. Because when you look at the entire, the local government system or the structure is the nerve center of every government. If your local government system is weak, your governance is weak. Because at the end of the day, they practicalize whatever projection or fulfillment of the theory that government has with regards to the assembly. They implement it at the grassroots.
And that's a problem, because people are arguing that the assembly members work so much, so hard, that they ought to be paid. We have a minister responsible for local government. We have a district chief executive or a municipal metropolitan chief executive. they are there. We have the district coordinating director, finance director is there. So where do we situate the assemblyman when it comes to the real work?
You know, my brother, if you care to know, and as a practitioner of a local government, I will tell you, the way they treat parliamentarians, for that matter, governor appointees, the same way they treat them. Because at the end of their tenure, they are given a handshake called ex gratia, which comes from their own idea, the internal generator fund. You understand?
Okay.
But to a large extent, at times, even they find it difficult to pay them. They don't base it on the consolidated fund of the company. Based on what money they have been able to generate within their locality, and their assembly as a system, as a mini parliament, they will decide how much should be paid to each personality. But even that one is difficult to do so. You understand? And also, at times, even some of them are forced to circumvent the law that will not allow the common fund to be used. And some of the time, you go to their books, you find that they circumvent the law and use the common fund to pay that ex gratia, which is against the law. You understand?
Yeah.
So I see no reason why somebody who is vested in local government will come and sit down and say that, oh, assignment should be paid now. No, it will not help the economy.
All right.
That aside, you could see that recently you heard Dr. Adukufo, his advice with regards to even the free education, HS. You heard it. If you care to know,
mm-hmm.
This government should hasten slowly. Because instead of crawling, they are running. They are coming out with certain conjectures, certain theories, which are not real. You see the thing? They think they are still in the campaign train. Whoever made that decision.
But how do you say they are not real if you've not attempted implementation?
Very good. Every law or every theory must be applied with regards to the condition existing that makes that theory perfect. You understand? But every law that you cannot apply it with regards to the exigency at that time, it becomes tutor. You understand? That's what I'm saying. So,
all right.
So they should be able to hasten slowly, study the economy, and come out with solution to the promises that they gave to Ghanaians, than to give a lot of promises as if they are doing campaign.
I'm sure you know how much members of parliament are paid. So if we all agree that this is what we want to do as a country, and members of parliament are going to sacrifice, say, 15% of what they take, that will be enough to pay their... They are not saying they want too much.
My brother, if you heard me right, I'm not saying they should not, if we have the money.
Okay.
Are you hearing me right?
I have you now.
Aha. Because I've been an assemblyman before I became a district executive. At the same time, rise up to become a member of parliament. So I know what I'm talking about. You understand? We should stop giving certain, promises to people which we cannot honor.
All right.
It's deception.
All right.
It's dishonesty.
Thank you very much.
We should not countenance it.
Thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. George Kuntu Blankson.
Thank you, my brother.
He's a local government expert and a former member of parliament, also a former member of an assembly. It's behind the news. We have on the line the chairman of the Parliamentary Select Committee on Local Government, a member of parliament for Achim Swedru, Kennedy Osei Nyakon. Good evening and welcome to the program. Very well, and nice having you. Where do you stand on this issue of whether or not members of various assemblies should be paid?
First of all, let me commend you for giving me the opportunity to also share my thoughts to your numerous listeners. Yes.
Honorable, your voice is too low. If you can speak up a bit for us.
Can you hear me now?
Better.
Can you hear me now?
I think it's better.
On the ideal situation, even paying assembly members wouldn't have been a bad idea. But that stands now to be very, very difficult for any government to implement such a policy. Why am I saying that? You have not less than 6,000 plus assembly members across the country. How is government going to get money to pay these people? it's going to overburden the already difficult situation that we have. So government will find it difficult to embark on such agenda. So that one, I would advise every government for now not to even think of doing that. Two, most of these assembly members that we have, most of them are working. Some are teachers, they draw their salaries from the consolidated fund, and it is against law that if any member draws two salaries from the same consolidated fund, it's illegal. So if an assembly member who is a teacher or an assembly member who works in government institution is being paid already, and he wants to, because he's an assembly member, he has to be paid again from the same consolidated. I mean,
but teachers are not paid from the consolidated fund, are they?
Come again?
Are teachers paid from the consolidated fund?
Every money, every government money that we use to pay, if you're a government worker, it comes from the consolidated fund. All funds that government uses to pay every worker in this country comes from the consolidated fund. So if it is from the consolidated fund, then you cannot draw double salary from the consolidated fund. Okay?
Okay.
That is number two. Number three, you know, these assembly members are operating within the locality, etc. Let's say certain electoral areas. And per the local government governance act, they are within the mandate of the assembly. So the assembly should be able to cater for those representatives for those areas. Every assembly, I mean, has the autonomy to collect levies and other fees. And these are the monies that, I mean, per the existing law, they are to use to give, allowances to those people. So if you get some assembly that are not performing in terms of IGF generation, then it means the assembly members within that the state will suffer. Because that is the only money. But when you come to AMA, KMA, those maybe the Metropolitan and Assembly, they are big IGFs. So they are able to cater for the assembly members very well. But when you go to the deprived district, like my district, for example, Broome South, it's a deprived area. That is no, I mean, economic activity there is, I mean, I would say it's zero. So if you depend on this market women, those small tools that you collect, how much can you give it to the assembly members? You know, any time they go for a meeting, they have to give them something. And because the money is not there, sometimes it's even difficult for call for the meeting. There are times that you need urgently to call for meeting, but because they don't have the money. Because any assembly member who comes right from his electoral area or wherever he finds himself and come to the assembly, or to conduct the assembly business. After, you need to give that person sitting allowance, set up for his transport and all those things.
All right.
If you don't have it. So I would rather, what I would recommend to government is that we should make some part of the common fund allocation, the DACF common fund allocation, we should just earmark part of it as an allowance for the assembly members instead of depending on the IGF of the assembly to cater for these people. Government can say, okay, the common fund going to the assembly, let's say 5% or 6%, let's set it aside for assembly members as an allowance for assembly members.
Okay.
And that one, it will ease the burden from some of the deprived assembly, district assembly. But as it stands now, I will never recommend to my government or any other government that it should put assembly members on payroll. I don't think that is what are the best practices as well. I don't think it happens anywhere that
all right.
Assembly members are put on permanent payroll and all those stuff. So I think we have not gotten to that stage, and it will be very suicidal for any government to think of that. But we can make provision to just cater some allowance
all right.
cater for them, yes.
We want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Very grateful, sir. Kennedy Osei-Nyako is the Member of Parliament for Achim Swedru. He is also the Chairman of the Parliamentary Select Committee on Local Government. It's behind the news. We have also on the line Alhaji Ibrahim Faila. He is the presiding member of the La Nkwantanai Municipal Assembly. Good evening and welcome to the program.
Good evening, my brother.
How long have you been an assemblyman?
For the past 6 years.
And do you think assembly members should be paid?
Interestingly, I will applaud the call from the head of the local government service. Why will I applaud the call is that...
Alhaji, if there's a radio set by you, please turn it off. It's giving us some bad feedback here.
Okay. Is it better?
Yes.
All right. The issue is, if you study the concept of decentralization, I'm a student of local government. If you study the concept itself, it entails very, very much. No two words about it. Number one, if you are living as an assembly member, within the, you always live within the community. And that is another problem between you and your electorate. Normally, when they are looking for you, they know your house, they know your door, they just come and knock and just see to you to address their complaints and their issues. Right now, before your call came, I just met someone who also followed me to the house. He's a disabled person. How can this such a person move all over from his constituency to meet with the MP or the Member of Parliament? Normally, the Member of Parliament does not live within the community. It is the Assembly Member who lives within the community. And when it happens that way, you are more reachable to the people, more accessible to the people. Therefore, you are the first point of call if there is any problem within the community. It is a laudable idea from the head of local government service, Dr. Nana Swata. But also, to disagree with my senior colleague, my senior brother, Kennedy was saying, you know, if you say maybe for some of members are teachers, others are working, others are doing this before being an assembly member, yes, it is true. I agree with that. But then to say that, yes, the person is being paid from the consolidated fund. Therefore, if he's also tasked on this particular job to be paid direct from the consolidated fund, it is wrong. No, I don't think it's wrong with
but that. But that is the law. The law states that you cannot be paid two times.
Two times, yes. Yes, that's what I'm saying. I disagree with him from that angle. But then, if there is a need for a teacher who knows that he took the work of the assembly as part-time job, and normally if you go to the assembly itself or all the assemblies, that is the way it has been framed. So if they now understand the decentralization concept itself as a full work of the assembly member, believe me, you, many of us will stop our normal jobs and concentrate on the assembly. I, for one, sitting here, I not use direct funds from my own company to even finance the work of my assembly, just because some of us uses the assembly as a stepping stone to move from one step to the other. And so assemblyman or unit committee, let me even include the unit committees, we are all living direct within the electorate and then within the electoral area. Therefore, if there is any problem, you will be the first point of call. So if there is a problem with someone within the community who comes to you, are you now going to say that, oh, let me go and find out from the assembly if they can get something for you? The moment you start doing that, the electorate will turn you as, someone who cannot perform. Unperformed person. And that's the way they will turn you. Some of us were able to elections because we are using our own company's finances to support the base of the assembly. So I think it is a laudable idea if the proposal from the head of local government service will go to the cabinet so that the government will also do best to it. I don't think it is too early for Ghanaians or for the people of Ghana to practice the form of absorbing members onto the consolidated fund.
All right.
So it is not too late.
Alhaji, we want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight.
Thank you very much, my brother.
Alhaji Ibrahim Faila is the presiding member of the La Nkwantanan Municipal Assembly. It's behind the news and some of your text messages. President Nana Akufo-Addo should not connive with the petitioners and impeach the electoral commissioner, Charlotte Osei Mrs. This is coming from Napoleon in Tumu Sankofa base. Mashud Kukum in Tamale, George, it is now clear that the NPP is not involved.